This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by True Niagen. New True Niagen Pro contains a unique form of vitamin B3, clinically proven to safely increase NAD, which is a vital resource used every day to help fuel and maintain the health of all living cells. NAD is critical for energy and cellular repair and supports muscle function. But as we age, NAD has been found to decline up to 50%. True Niagen Pro is clinically proven to safely increase NAD levels, caring for your cells to help you age better and live better. True Niagen Pro is only available through healthcare practitioners. Just go to drhoffmanstore.com. That's drhoffmanstore.com to get yours. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. And once again, I'll remind you that you can send questions to radioprogram@aol.com, radioprogram@aol.com. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are posing questions, right?
Yes.
We have a big folder of questions,
yep.
Right?
Yep. Keep them coming.
Keep them coming because we want to stay ahead. And, you know, I want to just, commemorate this, is that, we're kind of like the postman. Well, actually, the postman's no longer like the postman, but you're like rain, storm, inclement
right.
Weather. We deliver
yep.
the podcast on a weekly basis, faithfully.
Yes.
52 weeks a year.
Yeah.
And, that's a pretty sterling record.
Yes. Here's to us.
Right?
May we pat ourselves on the back. Yes.
Right, right. So, sometimes I'd be like, okay, I have laryngitis or like I lost my voice today, and then we'll do it later in the week. We always manage to.
We do. Yeah. We always manage to definitely do a podcast. Yeah. Yeah, it's fun. It's good. And keep those questions coming, everyone. This is great.
Yep. So right. What's our next question?
We have an email from Pat. I'm 72 and I'm looking for the minimum of brain supplements that will benefit my memory and avoid dementia or Alzheimer's. I see the protocols that you have, Dr. Hoffman. I hate to take these big, gigantic pills, so the fewer the better. I take a multi, a probiotic, turmeric, plus I take Acefex and two antidepressants.
That's a bit of a brain robber, and so is the antidepressant.
The Acefex, yeah. Right, right. I can't swallow gigantic pills. Is there anything else that you would recommend for me?
Isn't this sort of a common theme? It's like people say I all want an all-one pill,
yes.
or they want to take less, and I get that. And sometimes you have to prioritize. So, for example, I have an older relative who I'm treating for, she has a clinical diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease, mm-hmm. doing quite well. She was very vivacious and very lively at mm-hmm. her 90th birthday party. And then I said, boy, you were great at your birthday party. She goes, I don't remember. But at the time, she was
okay.
fine, and she's holding the line against cognitive decline. There's a little slight, we monitor every year, and there's a slight decline from year to year, but she's doing really quite well, and I've given her a panoply of nutrients, and there's some that she frankly doesn't like or can't take, and just so we do the best we can.
Yeah, yeah.
I will say this, is that having attended a really exciting workshop recently in Austin, Texas, on genetic testing and nutrigenomic prescribing, mm-hmm. Based on your genetic profile, that there are many subtypes of cognitive decline.
Yeah.
There's vascular dementia where it's mostly about your blood vessels. There's like some amyloid component
yeah.
to Alzheimer's. Mm-hmm. There's
Lewy body.
Yeah. Lewy body is a form of white matter disease. Mm-hmm. There's also a subtype that's specifically white matter disease where the white matter of the brain is attacked. And there are many pathways. Mm-hmm. There are also neurotransmitter elements to this. And when somebody has depression, obviously there's maybe some neurotransmitter elements, acetylcholine and serotonin mm-hmm. and the catecholamines, adrenaline and dopamine and noradrenaline. These all are part of the summation mm-hmm. of your memory and your cognitive abilities.
Yeah.
And they kind of, one may be more important in another, in one person versus another. And we can actually get to that through genetic testing. It's not covered by insurance.
Exciting.
It can be kind of expensive, but it is really worthwhile because we're really able to map people's cognitive destinies. And, you know, we can even treat patients with APOE4, which is thought to be the inevitable gene for cognitive decline, which actually, I think, spurred Dr. Perlmutter to do the work that he does because he is a carrier.
Yeah.
He, by his own admission, he's a carrier.
Yes.
Which increases his risk, but he also recognizes that there's what's called epigenetic expression of the genes so that the genes are not inevitably going to cause him problems if he does the right thing, if he keeps his blood sugar low, if he's on a ketogenic diet.
He's also disclosed that his father had Alzheimer's.
Right. So, this is actually the kind of profile we might want to do in somebody who has a family history where some one parent or another or both have dementia. We can actually tell them, what are your Achilles heels and how can we address them?
Yeah.
So that's a kind of a long way of saying that we really need to individualize care. We can talk about vinpocetine and huperzine and omega-3 with DHA
and
Bacopa, and we can talk about ginkgo, and we can talk about
acetyl-L-carnitine.
We can talk even, you know, NT factor works on the membranes, coenzyme Q10, nicotinamide riboside.
DHA.
I mean, I'm throwing out so many things. People are trying to madly write these things down and take everything that I'm mentioning. And, you know, that's sort of a shotgun approach. And, you know, I think that that could help.
Yeah.
But if you want some precision, maybe we can, you know, for the people who elect to do genetic screening, we can actually give them some, you know, either reassurance that maybe they don't have the SNPs.
Yes.
Nobody has a perfect picture. It's not like... you know, it's not
there's
like
there's no superhuman who will not.
It's not like the SATs. You know, like you get
1600.
You know, nobody. I look at my profile, and there's some weak areas, and then there's some good areas. There are also some areas that are protective. So,
yeah.
So you know,
just
the net effect.
Taking a look at all that
depends on your gene array, but also what you do with your life.
Yeah.
And actually, by the way, there's a whole set of genes for what's called BDNF.
Ah,
and so,
brain-derived neurotrophic factor.
And what's the treatment for that?
Is exercise, aerobic exercise.
But also sulforaphane seems to help that.
Oh, broccoli.
Yeah,
sprouts.
Things like an ashwagandha, you know, things like that, they help.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Pat is also saying that you can't take fish oil that smells and tastes like fish oil. It repeats on me all day. Pat, check the expiration. And number two, keep it in the fridge. Maybe your pantry is too warm.
And get a very highly purified one.
Yes.
Get, the one we like is Orthomega.
Orthomega is good.
But there's some other very good
there's
ones.
There's also DHA Select I like very much.
And which is really especially one of giving DHA, which may be more important than EPA for the brain.
Yeah.
So that's docosahexaenoic acid.
Yeah. Yeah. It's tough to say... You know, there's one...
Oh, and choline is a whole other one.
Oh, choline is very important.
And in the genetic tests that we're using, we can assess people's requirements for choline. There are some people who require two or three times more choline than others just to maintain adequate acetylcholine production. And methylation, it also has to do with methylation. And methylation SNPs affect the brain, and homocysteine affects the brain. So we want to look at that too.
Right.
But choline is a really important nutrient. You get it from soybeans. You also
get it from
eggs, yolks. When you get rid of the yolks, you don't get any choline. You get it from fish to some extent. You can take supplements of choline, or, you know, phosphatidylcholine or something called citicoline. These things may help to support the brain because... After all, the medications that are used for Alzheimer's, what are some of them? They actually build levels of choline, acetylcholine, the neurotransmitter acetylcholine.
So, I guess there's no powder.
There's a powder.
There
is a powder. It's called Brain Vibrance by Designs for Health. And it's a pretty good combo. You know, another thing is that the hormones help. You know, estrogen sometimes in women, DHEA and testosterone, and also pregnenolone can help cognition.
Right.
And, you know,
it's those waning hormones that can bring all of this on.
Yeah, we had a patient with that situation yesterday.
Yes.
And, you know, certainly you want to look at B12 levels because dearth of B12. You want to look at medications because medications can be problematic.
Acefex is keeping her from absorbing her nutrition.
Yep. And magnesium is important for the brain, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And we might suggest magnesium 3-8 for somebody like that to get across the blood-brain barrier.
Right. She's also on 2 antidepressants, and that could take its toll.
Can take its toll.
With regard to how her neurotransmitters are firing or not, or not being uptake, reuptake inhibitors, right?
Right.
So, Pat, keep your fish oil. Make sure it's highly purified, Orthomega, DHA Select. Keep it in a cool, dark place in your pantry. We're getting into warmer weather. You can even keep it in your refrigerator, like in your refrigerator door or something like that.
My refrigerator had so many vitamins in it that I got a bar refrigerator, and it's all vitamins. There's no
booze. Like a wine fridge?
Right.
Yeah. That you keep it. You've got all your vitamin fridge. Good. You could start a trend, Dr. Hoffman, with having a fridge like that. Pat, thank you for your question.
This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by True Niagen. New True Niagen Pro contains a unique form of vitamin B3, clinically proven to safely increase NAD, which is a vital resource used every day to help fuel and maintain the health of all living cells. NAD is critical for energy and cellular repair and supports muscle function. But as we age, NAD has been found to decline up to 50%. True Niagen Pro is clinically proven to safely increase NAD levels, caring for your cells to help you age better and live better. True Niagen Pro is only available through healthcare practitioners. Just go to drhoffmanstore.com. That's drhoffmanstore.com to get yours.
Dr. Hoffman, we have a similar question from Harun. I have prostate cancer. Can you recommend me a capsule which has all the nutrients mentioned in your article?
That seems to be there seems to be a trend on questions like that. I mean, the answer is no.
Yeah.
Because it would be a horse pill.
It would be a horse pill. It would be the size of a melon or a coconut or something.
Because I mentioned so many things that, you know, go to my, I guess you could Google Hoffman prostate cancer or even Hoffman prostate.
Yeah.
And you'll it's fairly high up in the Google search.
Yeah.
Because, so what are some of those things? Let's tick them off.
Salt palmetto.
Salt palmetto is more for BPH, so much for prostate cancer. I would use, EGCG, obviously, and turmeric, curcumin, genistein from soy
can
be helpful for it.
Okay.
It actually has been shown to be helpful.
Okay.
Vitamin D, of course, and then now there's a little bit of there's some pushback against selenium and vitamin E. I may need to revise that article, but I read a fairly interesting article about how gamma tocopherol may not be helpful, but it kind of depends on your genetics.
And whether there's selenium in that context as well. I think I know what you're talking
about.
There
was also the SELECT trial, called the SELECT trial. Well, I think they looked at vitamin E and selenium. They did not find them helpful.
Interesting. Okay.
By the way, there's some evidence that maybe too much synthetic beta carotene may not be good for the prostate.
So eat your carrots, eat your kale, eat your green leafies and your orange vegetables and all of that. But this is where really this whole move towards personalized medicine, the genetic testing, all of that is going to be so much more helpful forward.
And it's a work in progress. So what's interesting is when you get a report in, say, 2019, your report, because your genes don't change, your genes were the same on your date of birth as they are when you get submit a saliva sample in 2019. They're fixed. But the knowledge keeps changing and the knowledge interpretation. So what'll happen is you can have, based on the same genetic information, you've got a report in 2019, which you can recurate in 2020, 2021, 2025, and it may have a whole array of additional information about what your genes reveal based on the very active research that's going on about relationship between genes and nutrients and mm-hmm. diet and lifestyle and medication too.
Yeah.
Because we can use these genes to ascertain, for example, what's the best any hypertensive medication.
Yes.
You know, when we
or even the best psychiatric medication like the GenoMind.
Absolutely. Yes. There is a GenoMind test that actually it's not quite ready for prime time, but it's there's some precision medicine there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is actually something that Obama rolled out, the Precision Medicine Initiative.
Yeah.
And, you know, unfortunately that got translated to, let's come up with some very expensive $100,000 a year drugs.
Yeah.
You know, and, that are very targeted because they're not for everyone. They're based on people's cancer, mm-hmm. characteristics. You know, it's like your cancer. Your pancreatic cancer is different than somebody else's pancreatic cancer.
Yeah.
And so you need this drug. Your breast cancer is going to be different.
Mm-hmm.
But with genetics, we can actually decide, you know, what's, if we're looking at brain protective strategies, what's the best strategy where you're going to get bang for your buck? So you don't have to take a million things. Maybe you take certain things that are targeted and other things are less important,
mm-hmm.
you know, that they won't work for you.
Right. Right. So... okay. Haroon, with having prostate cancer, it's very important for you to be on the proper diet. You want to eliminate any and all sugar from your life, any and all preservatives, anything that you read on a food ingredient label that you don't understand, you should not put in your body.
And I read an article recently about the correlation between dairy consumption and prostate cancer.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to want our prostate cancer patients not to consume a lot of dairy.
Yeah.
But I also, I may not want them to be on a very high protein diet.
Right, right.
Because of IGF-1 that gets stimulated with too much protein.
Yes, yes.
So they plant-based with some adequate animal protein, mm-hmm. but not massive amounts.
Not massive, and not more than 30%.
And not a ton of cheese, please.
Not
thank
a ton
you.
Of, yeah. Dairy is problematic because of the insulin-like growth factor. Anything made from mother's milk has a lot of growth factors. They're meant for infants and calves and baby animals and babies. And what happens when we continue consuming this stuff and even now coming from another animal, not your mother?
Right.
Kind of makes you feel icky the way I just say that, the way I just said that. Now you're drinking another animal's milk. So we really don't need the stuff. So... the other thing, if I may digress, America's probably got the highest rates of osteoporosis in the world, and we're the biggest dairy-eating nation.
Mm-hmm.
That's not cause and effect. That's just an interesting observation,
right?
Is all. But right. it's very interesting. So, but it's also a Western diet, which has everything to do with it as well. Yeah. Haroon, you need a consult for your prostate cancer. Yeah. To get something targeted to you. Best of luck to you. All right. Oh, we have a question from Dana. And this is actually a question I'm answering that you may have already read in the newsletter from last week at this point in time, being that we're a week ahead. Dana writes, can you tell me what you think about the starch-based diet by Dr. John McDougall? And Dr. McDougall is vegetarian vegan, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
And he thinks that we as humans are starch eaters or starchitarians or starchivores, if you will.
Right.
Right. And this is via an interview from BlueZones.com
okay.
that he gave in the year 2016.
Yep.
That was very interesting. And he's saying that herbivore is the best way to be. Herbivore meaning just all plant-based nutrition, mm-hmm. not omnivore, which is both plant-based and animal, and certainly not carnivore, according to him. When asked how likely it is that an herbivore will get diabetes, cancer, or heart disease over a carnivore, Dr. McDougall says that if you follow his diet, the likelihood is zero compared to meat eaters.
I think that that's a rather audacious claim.
It is. So,
but he's a rather audacious person.
He is. He is. So
he will brook no other argument. And
right.
He's decided.
He's decided.
And
yeah.
I mean, he's branded. He is the vegan advocate.
Yes.
You know.
Yes.
And he's very much associated with PCRM, the Physicians mm. Committee for Responsible Medicine, which mm-hmm. is a innocent sounding acronym, but it's actually a militant vegan group.
It's true.
That's allied with PETA.
Yeah.
And I think there's more ideology than science behind that.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, if we pick, let's pick a food group that, you know, we want to accentuate. I think starch would probably be one of the worst food groups
Absolutely.
To accentuate.
Yeah.
The only thing worse might be sugar.
Yes.
I mean, resistant starch is mm-hmm. probably not a bad idea because it feeds the microbiome.
Yeah.
But, you know, starch suggests that you could eat a lot of pasta.
Yeah.
And that you could eat a lot of potato-based mm-hmm. products.
Mm-hmm. Potato, rice, corn, that should be the core,
I mean,
according to McDougall.
So, so how do we account for people who are on a starchitarian diet who are like South Asian? They have a predisposition in India and Pakistan for metabolic syndrome and diabetes.
Yes.
And they're religiously, many of them are vegans.
That's true.
And they're obese and mm-hmm. diabetic.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're eating too much starch.
Right, right.
Same thing with some Latinos
yeah.
who, you know, culturally have the
plantain,
white rice,
corn.
white rice.
Yeah.
It's like, I mean, for them, eating white rice is like, for me, eating a bagel. It's like an ethnic
yeah. yes,
you know,
exactly.
thing. You know?
Exactly.
It's like,
yeah.
so we're early imprinted with these,
yeah.
you know, emotional food preferences.
So he talks about, you know, the blue zones, people living in the blue zones, and that they're more plant-based, but they also do eat some meat. But Dr. McDougall say that he likens eating meat to smoking cigarettes, and that animal foods aren't necessary.
Well, that's
for micronutrients and protein.
That's just wrong.
It's just wrong.
It's so wrong.
Yeah. And that animal products are toxic in terms of fat content and cholesterol, and protein is damaging to the system. Wow, you couldn't live without protein and cholesterol. Cholesterol is an antioxidant. But, you know,
this
cardiologists
guy,
don't know that.
This guy's not a scientist. He's a polemicist.
Not. Yeah. Yeah. So
And that book, you know,
yeah.
it's got to, I mean.
Here's something a little more outrageous, though.
Yeah.
He recommends using a little salt and a bit of sugar on the surface of food so that you will want to eat it.
Hmm. Good idea. So
yeah.
it makes the pasta more palatable.
Yeah. And Dr. McDougall goes on to say that while a teaspoon of brown sugar in a bowl of oatmeal may cause cavities and raise triglycerides, it's not likely to increase obesity or type 2 diabetes.
Well, has he practiced,
has he practiced
nutrition with us?
Oh, my goodness. Oh, yeah. And his argument against...
Also, there's a second meal effect. When you have oatmeal,
yeah.
I mean, I notice this too. So I got a long,
I have to eat lunch by 10:30.
I have a long day ahead
yeah.
and a busy day.
Yeah.
And so what did I have for breakfast? I had a mushroom onion omelet.
Yum.
And then I capped it off with a few almonds.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's going to tide me over a lot better than
yeah.
if I had a bowl of oatmeal. Because I sometimes revert. I say, well, that oatmeal looks really good.
Yeah.
I'll be at a hotel or something. I'll have a nice
yeah.
pot of oatmeal. I say,
yes.
let me go back to, I mean, I'm not allergic. I'll have
yeah,
the oatmeal.
Yeah, let's have some
and
oatmeal.
Man, I get really hungry if
I'm
just have that.
I'm hungry 2.5
yeah.
hours later.
I buffer that sometimes by saying, okay, I'll have a couple of hard-boiled eggs with the oatmeal. You know, and it ties me over. But
yeah.
it sends a signal, an
yeah.
insulin signal,
right.
where the second meal effect is already there,
exactly.
where the next meal is going to be, you're going to crave more,
mm-hmm.
want to eat more.
Mm. His argument, Dr. McDougall's argument against low-carb diets, he, quote, these diets, like the original Atkins diet, weak belly, grain brain, work by putting you into ketosis. What they really do is make you sick.
Ketosis is sick only in the intensive care unit in patients who have...
Which is ketoacidosis. Which is not ketosis
so he has
at
a,
all.
He has yeah. a... He has a His bias leads him to not look at the science
yeah.
behind this.
Yeah, which does not make him a good scientist. That doesn't make anyone a good scientist.
Yeah.
You have to be able to
So he says, you know, ketosis is sick? No, ketosis
yeah.
is a natural state of...
It's our primary fuel, if you really think about it.
Ketosis is natural because that's the way we, in a paleo setting, we would go for periods of time where it was hunger season.
Like
and the only thing that was available was game.
Yep.
And there wasn't a lot of starch. Starch is an introduction in the human diet that occurred in the Neolithic times when they started farming and they
yeah.
started having wheat and barley,
mm-hmm.
you know, maybe 5 or 10,000 years ago. Relatively recent adaptation for human evolution,
mm-hmm.
where actually some people have talked about the Neolithic tragedy, the tragedy that humans From a health standpoint, they were able to have society and have more calories by cultivating agriculture, but also to the detriment of their health.
Yes.
And, you know, so for example, the Spaniards, when they landed in, you know, the conquistadors, when they landed in the New World, they looked at the Native Americans, and this, the Native Americans, they're splendid specimens. They're so tall and so robust. Mm-hmm. And the Spaniards were like little 5 foot two, you know, guys, you know, schlepping this heavy armor. They weren't really that big because they were on this already agricultural diet.
Starchy, that's they when had, humans they, became smaller and
They had dental caries. They had, you know, certain other degenerative diseases that are associated with departure from a Paleolithic diet. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a little overly simplistic to say that because, sure, those, you know, the Native Americans had health issues.
Yeah.
Not the least of it was the infectious diseases that were transmitted to them by the Europeans.
Yeah.
That their bodies were genetically naive towards. Mm-hmm. Their bodies had not adapted to. Yeah. So they got the measles, they died. They got, you know, syphilis, they got, you know. Well, actually, syphilis was imported to the Spaniards from the, from the New World.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, this, I just don't see, it's almost like the analogies take some very ridiculous proposition and write a book about it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the opposite of what's true.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Is that we should, you know, starch could be a part of the diet, especially for people who are well adapted and have a high degree of physical activity.
Mm-hmm.
But we have such an overabundance of starch because of industrialized food production.
Yes.
And I think he's on that. I think he's probably saying, oh, you should get your starch from really whole grains.
Right.
So I had a dish in a restaurant, and fortunately I don't have celiac disease. It was like salmon, and it was sitting on these little grain berries.
Ah.
And those were wheat berries.
Wheat berries,
and
yeah.
man, they were chewy and, you know, very filling.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know,
tasty.
Yeah, but, you know, if I'd had like three slices of bread, it would have had a different effect on me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Right. Right. So, Dana, that's what we think of the starch-based diet by Dr. McDougall.
And I think the public, you know, that book is not by no means a bestseller. Or it's not really taken off.
Yeah. I've not seen it and seen it around, so to speak, or talked about. I'm asked about it from time to time, but that's about it. It's not anything that was, it was not anything to stop traffic about or anything, so.
Yeah, it's a minority opinion. It's like in, you know, economics, if somebody said, let's go back to the gold standard. Let's trade, you know, gold and silver coins. Well, some people may think is a good idea, but, you know, it's sort of a, this kind of like a retro opinion.
Mm-hmm.
That's a book that could have been written in, you know, 1968.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Okay.
All right. Well, we're running a little short on time.
Okay.
So time flies when you're having fun.
Mm-hmm.
We have a few more questions, obviously, in the mail hopper.
Yep.
And we'll address those when we return next week for another edition of Q&A with Layla.
Thank you for listening, everyone.
Radioprogram@AOL.com is the place to send questions. And if you want to record questions that I'll answer on our radio program, we have a live program on weekends, but sometimes we squeeze in some recorded questions. Go to drhoffman.com. Edit drhoffman.com on the homepage using a PC or Mac because it's not yet mobile enabled. You will be prompted to record a question, so record away, and we'll answer those questions during our weekly radio broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting our sponsors. Check out our Hoffman Center store at drhoffman.com. Click on it, enroll in FullScript, and have access to many of the products that we talk about in this program. Thanks, Layla, for joining us.
Thanks, Dr. Hoffman.
And thank you, listeners. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.
This is Layla Mudin, RD. I see patients regularly, along with Dr. Hoffman. If you require a nutrition consult with me but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.